Chapter 17. Yes, of course, Francesca is a wonder. But you already knew that, didn't you? From Helen Stirling to her son, the Earl of Kilmartin, 2 years and 9 months after his departure for India. Michael wasn't certain when it had become apparent to him that he would have to seduce her. He'd tried to appeal to her mind, to her innate sense of the practical and wise, and it wasn't working. And it couldn't be about emotion, because that, he knew, was one-sided. So it would have to be passion. He wanted her. Oh, God, he wanted her. With an intensity he hadn't even imagined before he'd kissed her the week previous in London. But even as his blood raced with desire and need, and, yes, love, his mind was sharp and calculating, and he knew that if he was to bind her to him, he would need to do it with this. He would have to claim her in a way she could not deny. He couldn't just try to convince her with words and thoughts and ideas. She could attempt to talk herself out of that, pretend the feelings weren't there. But if he made her his, left his imprint on her in the most physical way possible, he would be with her always, and she would be his. She slipped out from beneath his fingers, edging backward until she'd put a few paces between them. "Don't you want another kiss, Francesca?" he murmured, moving toward her with predatory grace. "It was a mistake," she said, her voice shaky. She scooted back a few inches farther, stopping only when she bumped into the edge of a table. He moved forward. "Not if we marry."
"I can't marry you. You know that."
He took her hand, idly rubbed the skin with his thumb.
"And why is that?"
"Because you're you."
"True," he said, lifting her hand to his mouth and kissing her palm. Then he flicked his tongue along her wrist, just because he could.
"And for the first time in a very long while," he said, glancing up at her through his lashes, "there is no one I'd rather be just now."
"Michael,"
she whispered, arching backwards. But she wanted him. He could hear it in her breath.
"Michael, no, or Michael, yes," he murmured, kissing the inside of her elbow.
"I don't know," she moaned.
"Fair enough."
He moved higher, nudging at her chin, until she had no choice but to loll back. And he had no choice but to make love to her neck. He kissed her slowly, thoroughly, sparing no inch of skin his sensual onslaught. He moved up to the line of her jaw, then over to her earlobe, then back down to the edge of her bodice, grasping it between his teeth. He heard Francesca gasp, but she didn't tell him to stop, so he just pulled and pulled and pulled until one breast popped free. God, he loved current women's fashions.
"Michael,"
she whispered.
"Shh."
He didn't want to have to answer any questions. He didn't want her thinking enough to ask one. He ran his tongue along the underside of her breast, tasting the salty, sweet essence of her skin, then reached out and cupped her. He'd touched her through her dress the first time they'd kissed, and he'd thought that was heaven. But nothing compared to the feel of her, hot and bare in his hand.
"Oh, my," she moaned. "Oh."
He blew lightly on her nipple.
"Shall I kiss you?"
He looked up. He knew he was taking a chance with this, waiting for her answer. He probably shouldn't even have posed the question, but even though his intent was to seduce, he couldn't quite bring himself to do it, without at least one affirmative word from her.
"Shall I?"
he murmured again, sweetening the deal with one light flick of his tongue across her nipple.
"Yes,"
she burst out.
"Yes, for God's sake, yes."
He smiled, slowly, languidly, savouring the moment. And then, after letting her quiver with anticipation for 1 second longer than was probably fair, he leaned in and took her into his mouth,
pouring years and years of desire onto the one breast, centering it wickedly onto one innocent nipple. She wasn't going to stand a chance.
My God!
She gasped, grasping the edge of the table for purchase as her entire body arched back.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
He took advantage of her passion to slide his hands around her hips and lift her up until she was seated on the table, her legs parting for him as he stepped into their feminine cradle. Satisfaction raced through his veins, even as his body screamed for its own pleasure. He loved that he could do this to her, make her scream and moan and cry out with desire. She was so strong, always so cool and composed, and yet right now she was simply and purely his, a slave to her own needs, captive to his expert touch. He kissed, he licked, he nibbled, he tugged. He tortured her until he thought she might explode. Her breath was loud and gasping, and her moans had grown more and more incoherent. And all the while his hands were moving silently up her legs, first grasping her ankles, then her calves, pushing her skirts up and up until they settled in a rumpled pool above her knees. And it was only then that he pulled away and gave her a hint of a reprieve. She looked at him, her eyes glazed, her lips pink and parted. She didn't say anything. He didn't think she could say anything. But he saw the questions in her eyes. She might be beyond speech, but she was several minutes away from total insanity. "I thought it would be cruel to torture it any longer," he said, lightly taking her nipple between his thumb and forefinger. She groaned. "You like that?" It was a statement, and not a particularly sophisticated one. But this was Francesca, not some nameless woman he was tapping while he closed his eyes and imagined her face. And every time she mewled with pleasure, his heart raced with joy. "You like it," he said again, smiling with satisfaction.
"Yes,"
she whispered.
"Yes."
He leaned in until his lips were brushing her ear.
"You'll like this, too."
"What?"
she asked, surprising him with her query. He'd thought she was too far gone to question him aloud. He nudged her skirts a little higher, just enough so that there was no danger of them falling off her lap.
"You want to hear it, don't you?"
he murmured, sliding his hands until they were just above her knees. He squeezed her thighs gently, circling against her skin with his thumbs.
"You want to know?"
She nodded. He moved toward her again, lightly touching his lips to hers, close enough to feel her, yet far enough to speak.
"You were always so curious," he murmured. "You asked so many questions."
He slid his lips along her cheek to her ear, whispering all the way.
"Michael,"
he said, softening his voice to mimic hers,
"tell me something naughty. Tell me something wicked."
She blushed. He couldn't see it, but he could feel it, sense the hot rush of blood to her skin.
"But I never told you what you wanted to hear, did I?"
he asked, lightly nipping at her earlobe.
"I always left you outside the bedroom door."
He paused, not because he expected an answer, just because he wanted to hear her breathe.
"Did you wonder?"
he whispered.
"Did you leave me and wonder what I hadn't told you?"
He leaned in, just so she'd feel his lips move whisper light against her ear.
"Did you want to know," he whispered, "what I did when I was wicked?"
He wouldn't make her answer. It wouldn't be fair, but he couldn't stop his own mind from racing back in time, remembering the countless times he'd teased her with hints of his exploits. He had never been the one to bring them up, however. She had always asked.
"Do you want me to tell you?"
he murmured. He felt her jerk slightly in surprise, and he chuckled.
"Not about them, Francesca.
You.
Only you."
She turned, causing his lips to slide along her cheek. He drew back so he could see her face, and her question was clear in her eyes. "What do you mean?" He moved his hands, exerting just enough pressure on her thighs to spread them open one more wicked inch. "Do you want me to tell you what I'm going to do now?" He leaned down, running his tongue along her nipple, which had grown hard and taut in the cool air of the late afternoon. "To you," he added. She swallowed convulsively. He decided to take that as a yes. "There are so many choices," he said huskily, sliding his hands up her legs another few inches. "I scarcely know where to start." He stopped to look at her for a moment. She was breathing hard, her lips parted and plump from his kisses, and she was mesmerized, completely under his spell. He dipped closer once again to her other ear, so he could make sure his words fell hot and moist upon her soul.
"I think, however, that I would have to start where you need me most. First, I'd kiss you."
He pressed his thumbs into the soft flesh of her inner thighs.
"Here."
He held silent, just for a second, just long enough for her to shiver with desire.
"Would you like that?" he murmured,
his question intended to torment and tease.
"Yes, I can see that you would. But that wouldn't be enough," he mused, "for either of us. So clearly, I would then have to kiss you here."
His thumbs inched up until they reached the hot crevice between her legs and her torso, and then he pressed gently, so she would know exactly what he was talking about.
"I think you would enjoy a kiss right there," he added, "almost as much."
He slid along the crease, down, down, closer to the very centre of her, but not quite all the way,
"as I would like to kiss you."
Her breath came a little faster.
"I'd have to take my time there," he murmured. "Switch, perhaps, from my lips to my tongue. Run it along the edge, right here."
He used one fingernail to show her what he meant.
"And all the while, I would be pushing you farther and farther open. Like that, maybe."
He drew back as if to examine his handiwork. The sight of her was stunningly erotic. She was perched on the edge of the table, her legs open to him, although not nearly enough for what he wanted to do. The skirt of her dress still hung down between her thighs, shielding her from his view. But somehow that made her almost more tempting. He didn't need to see her, he realized. Not yet, anyway. Her position was sultry enough, made even more wicked by her breast, still bared to his gaze, its nipple pink and taut and begging for more. But nothing, nothing could have speared him with more desire than the sight of her face. Parted lips, eyes darkened to cobalt with passion. Every breath she took seemed to call to him, "Take me." And it was almost enough to force him to abandon his wicked seduction and plunge into her right then and there. But no. He had to do this slowly. He had to tease her and torture her, bring her to the very heights of ecstasy, and then keep her there as long as he could. He had to make sure they both understood that this was something they could never, ever live without. But still, it was hard. No, he was hard, and it was so damned difficult to exercise restraint.
"What do you think, Francesca?"
he murmured, giving her thighs one last squeeze.
"I don't think we've opened you enough, do you?"
She made a sound. He would never know how to describe it, but it set him afire.
"Maybe," he said softly, "more like this."
And he pushed slowly, inexorably, until she was spread wide. Her skirt went taut over her thighs, and he tisk-tisked at it, murmuring,
"That can't be comfortable. Let me help you with that."
He hooked his fingers over the hem and slid it up until it pooled about her waist, and she was completely exposed. He couldn't see her yet, not with his eyes still focused inexorably on her face, but the knowledge of her position made them both shiver, he with desire, she with anticipation, and he had to steel his shoulders just to maintain his control. It wasn't his time yet. It would be soon, to be sure. He was quite certain he'd perish if he didn't make her his that night. But for now, this was still about Francesca, and what he could make her feel. He put his lips to her ear. "You're not cold, are you?" Her only answer was her shivering breath. He brought one finger to her womanly centre and began to stroke.
"I would never allow you to remain cold," he whispered. "That would be so ungentlemanly of me."
His stroke slid into circles, slow and hot against her flesh.
"If we were out of doors," he mused, "I would offer my coat. But here..."
He slid one fingertip inside, just enough to make her gasp.
"I can only offer my mouth."
She made another incoherent sound, this one barely more than strangled cry.
"Yes,"
he said wickedly,
"that is what I would do to you. I'd kiss you right here, right where it would pleasure you the most."
She could do nothing but breathe.
"I believe I would start with my lips," he murmured, "but then I would have to use my tongue so I could explore you more deeply."
He used his fingers to tickle her, demonstrating what he planned to do with his mouth.
"Rather like this, I think, but it would be much hotter."
He ran his tongue along the inside of her ear.
"And wetter."
"Michael,"
she moaned. She'd said his name, and nothing more. She was getting closer to the brink.
"I'd taste everything," he whispered, "every last drop of you. And then, just when I was sure I'd explored you completely, I'd part you further."
He spread her with his fingers, pulling her open in the most wicked way possible. Then he tickled her flesh with his fingernail.
"Just in case I'd missed some secret corner."
"Michael,"
she moaned again.
"Who knows how long I'd kiss you," he murmured. "I might not be able to stop."
He moved his face down a little so that he could nuzzle her neck.
"You might not want me to stop."
He paused, then slid another finger inside of her. He whispered,
"Do you want me to stop?"
He was playing with fire every time he asked her a question, every time he gave her a chance to say no. If he were colder, more calculating, he would just press on with his seduction, and he could sweep her away before she could even begin to consider her actions. She'd be lost on her wave of passion, and before she knew it, he would be inside of her, and she would be, finally and indelibly, his. But something in him could never be quite that ruthless, not with Francesca. And he needed her approval, even if it was nothing more than a nod or a moan. She'd probably regret this later. But even so, he didn't want her to be able to say, even to herself, that she hadn't been thinking, that she hadn't said yes. And he needed the yes. He had loved her for years, dreamed about touching her for so damned long. And now that the moment was finally here, he just didn't know if he could bear it if she didn't really want it. There were only so many ways a man's heart could break, and he had a feeling his couldn't survive another puncture.
"Do you want me to stop?"
he whispered again, and this time he did stop. He didn't remove his hands, but he didn't move them either, just held still and allowed her a moment of quiet in which to make her answer. And he pulled his head back, just far enough so that she had to look at him. Or if not that, then at least he would be looking at her.
"No,"
she whispered, not quite raising her eyes to his. His heart jumped in his chest.
"Then I had better get to doing everything I talked about,"
he murmured, and he did. He sank to his knees and he kissed her. He kissed her as she shuddered. He kissed her as she moaned. He kissed her when she grabbed his hair and pulled, and he kissed her when she let go, her hands scrambling wildly for purchase. He kissed her in every way he'd promised he would, and he kissed her until she almost climaxed. Almost. He should have done it, should have followed through, but he just couldn't manage it. He had to have her. He'd wanted this for so long, wanted to make her scream his name and shudder in his arms. But when it happened, for the first time at least, he wanted to be inside her. He wanted to feel her around him, and he wanted to... Hell, he just wanted it this way. And if it meant he was out of control, so be it. Hands shaking, he tore open his breeches, finally allowing his manhood to spring free. "Michael," she whispered. Her eyes had been closed, but when he moved and left her, she'd opened them. She looked down at him, her eyes widening. There was no mistaking what was about to happen. "I need you," he said hoarsely. And when she did nothing but stare at him, he said it again. "I need you now." But not on the table. Even he wasn't that talented, so he picked her up, shuddering with delight as she wrapped her legs around him and set her down on the plush carpet. It wasn't a bed, but there was no way he was going to make it to a bed, and frankly, he didn't think either of them would care. He pushed her skirts back up to her waist, and he covered her, and entered her. He'd thought to go slowly, but she was so wet and ready for him that he just slid inside, even as she gasped at the intrusion.
"Did that hurt?"
he grunted. She shook her head.
"Don't stop," she moaned. "Please."
"Never," he vowed. "Never."
He moved, and she moved beneath him, and they were both already so aroused that it was a mere moment later that they both exploded. And he, who had slept with countless women, suddenly realized that he'd been nothing but a green boy, because it had never been like this. That had been his body. This was his soul.
Chapter 18.
"Absolutely." From Michael Sterling to his mother Helen, 3 years after his departure for India. The following morning was, to the best of Francesca's recollection, quite the worst of recent memory. All she wanted to do was cry, but even that seemed beyond her. Tears were for the innocent, and that was an adjective that she could never again use to describe herself. She hated herself this morning, hated that she'd betrayed her heart, her every last principle, all for a spot of wicked passion. She hated that she had felt desire for a man other than John, and really hated that the desire had gone beyond anything she'd felt with her husband. Her marriage bed had been one of laughter and passion, but nothing, nothing could have prepared her for the wicked thrill she had felt when Michael had placed his lips to her ear and told her all the naughty things he wanted to do with her, or for the explosion that had followed when he'd made good on his promises. She hated that this had all happened, and she hated that it had happened with Michael, because somehow that made it all seem triply wrong. And most of all, she hated him, because he'd asked her permission, because every step of the way, even as his fingers had teased her mercilessly, he had made sure she was willing. And now she could never claim that she'd been swept away, that she'd been powerless against the force of her own passion. And now it was the morning after, and Francesca realized that she could no longer differentiate between coward and fool, at least not as the terms pertained to herself. She clearly was both, quite possibly with an immature thrown in for bad measure, because all she wanted to do was run. She could face up to the consequences of her actions. Truly, that was what she should do. But instead, just like before, she fled. She couldn't really leave Kilmartin. She'd just got there after all, and unless she was prepared to carry her northward flight straight past the Orkney Islands into Norway, she was stuck where she was. But she could leave the house, which was precisely what she did at the first streaks of dawn, and this after her pathetic performance the night before, when she'd stumbled out of the Rose drawing-room some 10 minutes after her intimacies with Michael, mumbling incoherencies and apologies, only to barricade herself in her bedroom for the rest of the evening. She didn't want to face him yet. Heaven above, she didn't think she could. She, who had always prided herself on her cool and level head, had been reduced to a stammering idiot, muttering to herself like a bedlamite, terrified to face the one man she quite obviously couldn't avoid forever. But if she could avoid him for one day, she told herself, that was something. And as for tomorrow, well, she could worry about tomorrow some other time. Tomorrow, maybe. For now, all she wanted to do was run from her problems. Courage, she was now quite certain, was a vastly overrated virtue. She wasn't sure where she wanted to go. Anywhere that could be termed out would probably do. Any spot where she could tell herself that the odds of running into Michael were slim indeed. And then, because she was quite convinced that no higher power was inclined to show her benevolence ever again, it began to rain an hour into her hike, starting first as a light sprinkle, but quickly developing into a full-fledged downpour. Francesca huddled under a wide-limbed tree for shelter, resigned to wait out the rain, and then finally, after 20 minutes of shifting her weight from foot to foot, she just sat her bottom down onto the damp earth. Cleanliness be hanged. She was going to be here for some time. She might as well be comfortable, since she wasn't going to be either warm or dry. And, of course, that was how Michael found her, just short of 2 hours later. Good God, it figured he'd look for her. Couldn't a man be counted on to behave like a cad when it truly mattered?
"Is there room for me under there?" he called out over the rain.
"Not for you and your horse," she grumbled.
"What was that?"
"No!"
she yelled. He didn't listen to her, of course, and nudged his mount under the tree, loosely tying the gelding to a low branch after he'd hopped down.
"Jesus, Francesca," he said without preamble. "What the hell are you doing out here?"
"And good day to you, too," she muttered.
"Do you have any idea how long I've been looking for you?"
"About as long as I've been huddled under the tree, I imagine," she retorted. She supposed she should be glad that he'd come to rescue her, and her shivering limbs were just itching to leap onto his horse and ride away. But the rest of her was still in a foul mood, and quite willing to be contrary, just for the sake of being, well, contrary. Nothing could put a woman in worse spirits than a nice bout of self-derision. Although, she thought rather peevishly, he was certainly not blameless in the debacle that was last night. And if he assumed that her litany of panicked, after-the-fact I'm sorry's the night before meant that she'd absolved him of guilt, he was quite mistaken.
"Well, let's go then,"
he said briskly, nodding toward his mount. She kept her gaze fixed over his shoulder.
"The rain is letting up."
"In China, perhaps."
"I'm quite fine," she lied.
"Oh, for God's sake, Francesca," he said in short tones. "Hate me all you want, but don't be an idiot."
"It's too late for that,"
she said under her breath.
"Maybe so,"
he agreed, demonstrating annoyingly superior hearing.
"But I'm damned cold, and I want to go home. Believe what you will, but right now I have a far greater desire for a cup of tea than I do for you."
Which should have reassured her. But instead, all she wanted to do was hurl a rock at his head. But then, perhaps just to prove that her soul wasn't immediately headed for a toasty locale, the rain did let up. Not all the way, but enough to lend a hint of truth to her lie.
"The sun will be out in no time," she said, motioning to the drizzle. "I'm fine."
And do you plan to lie in the middle of the field for 6 hours until your dress dries off? He drawled. Or do you just prefer a slow, lingering case of lung fever?
She looked him straight in the eye for the first time.
You are a horrible man, she said.
He laughed.
Now that is the first truthful thing you've said all morning.
Is it possible you don't understand that I wish to be alone? She countered.
Is it possible you don't understand that I wish for you not to die of pneumonia? Get on the horse, Francesca, he ordered,
in much the same tone she imagined he'd used on his troops in France. When we are home, you may feel free to lock yourself in your room for a full 2 weeks, if it so pleases you.
But for now, can we just get the hell out of the rain?
It was tempting, of course, but even more than that, damned irritating, because he was speaking nothing but sense, and the last thing she wanted just now was for him to be right about anything, especially because she had a sinking feeling she needed more than 2 weeks to get past what had happened the evening before. She was going to need a lifetime.
Michael,
she whispered, hoping she might be able to appeal to whichever side of him took pity on pathetic, quivering females.
I can't be with you right now.
For a 20-minute ride, he snapped.
And then, before she had the presence of mind to even yelp in irritation, he'd hauled her to her feet, and then off her feet, and then onto his horse.
Michael!
She shrieked.
Sadly, he said in a dry voice, not said in the same tones I heard from you last night.
She smacked him.
I deserved that,
he said, mounting the horse behind her, and then doing a devilish wiggle until she was forced, by the shape of the saddle, to settle partially onto his lap.
But not as much as you deserve to be horsewhipped for your foolishness,
she gasped.
If you wanted me to kneel at your feet, begging for your forgiveness, he said, his lips scandalously close to her ear, you shouldn't have behaved like an idiot and run off in the rain.
It wasn't raining when I left,
she said childishly, letting out a little, oh, of surprise when he spurred the horse into motion. Then, of course, she wished she had something else to hold on to for balance besides his thighs, or that his arm wasn't wrapped quite so tightly around her, or so high on her ribcage. Good God, her breasts were practically sitting on his forearm. And never mind that she was nestled quite firmly between his legs, with her backside butted right up against... Well, she supposed the rain was good for one thing. He had to be shrivelled and cold, which was going a long way in her imagination toward keeping her own traitorous body in check. Except that she'd seen him the night before... Seen Michael in a way she'd never thought to see him, of all people, in all of his splendid male glory. And that was the worst part of all. A phrase like splendid male glory ought to be a joke, to be uttered with sarcasm and a cunningly wicked smile. But with Michael, it fit perfectly. He'd fit perfectly, and she'd lost whatever shreds of sanity she'd still possessed. They rode on in silence. Or, if not precisely silence, they at least did not speak. But there were other sounds, far more dangerous and unnerving. Francesca was acutely aware of every breath he took, low and whispering across her ear, and she could swear she could hear his heart beating against her back. And then...
Damn!
What is it?
She asked, trying to twist around to see his face.
Felix has gone lame,
he muttered, leaping down from the saddle.
"Is he all right?"
she inquired, accepting his wordless offer to help her dismount as well.
"He'll be fine,"
Michael said, kneeling in the rain to inspect the gelding's front left leg. His knees sank instantly into the muddy earth, ruining his riding breeches.
"He can't carry the both of us, however. Couldn't even manage just you, I fear."
He stood, scanning the horizon, determining just where on the property they were.
"We'll have to make for the gardener's cottage,"
he said, impatiently pushing his sodden hair from his eyes. It slid right back over his brow.
"The gardener's cottage,"
Francesca echoed, even though she knew perfectly well what he was talking about. It was a small, one-room structure, uninhabited since the current gardener, whose wife had recently been delivered of twins, had moved into a larger dwelling on the other side of Kilmartin.
"Can't we go home?"
she asked a little desperately. She didn't need to be alone with him, trapped in a cosy little cottage with, if she remembered correctly, a rather large bed.
"It will take us over an hour on foot," he said grimly, "and the storm is growing worse."
He was right, drat it all. The sky had taken on a queer, greenish hue, the clouds touched with that strange light that preceded a storm of exquisite violence.
"Very well,"
she said, trying to swallow her apprehension. She didn't know which frightened her more, the thought of being stuck out of doors in the storm, or trapped inside a small cottage with Michael.
"If we run, we can be there in just a few minutes,"
Michael said.
"Or rather, you can run. I'll have to lead Felix. I don't know how long it will take for him to make the journey."
Francesca felt her eyes narrowing as she turned to him.
"You didn't do this on purpose, did you?"
He turned to her with a thunderous expression, matched, rather terrifyingly, by the streak of lightning that flashed through the sky.
"Sorry,"
she said hastily, immediately regretting her words. There were certain things one never accused a British gentleman of, the foremost of which was deliberate injury to an animal, for any reason.
"I apologise,"
she added, just as a clap of thunder shook the earth.
"Truly, I do."
"Do you know how to get there?"
he yelled over the storm. She nodded.
"Can you start a fire while you wait for me?"
"I can try."
"Go then," he said curtly. "Run and get yourself warm. I'll be there soon enough."
She did, although she wasn't quite sure whether she was running to the cottage or away from him. And considering the fact that he'd be mere minutes behind her, did it really matter? But as she ran, her legs aching and her lungs burning, the answer to that question didn't seem terribly important. The pain of the exertion took over, matched only by the sting of the rain against her face. But it all felt strangely appropriate, as if she deserved no more. And, she thought miserably, she probably didn't. By the time Michael pushed open the door to the gardener's cottage, he was soaked to the bone and shivering like a madman. It had taken far longer than he had anticipated to lead Felix to the gardener's cottage. And then, of course, he'd been faced with the task of finding a decent spot to tie the injured gelding, since he couldn't very well leave him under a tree in an electrical storm. He'd finally managed to fashion a makeshift stall in what used to be a chicken shed, but the end result was that by the time he made it into the cottage, his hands were bleeding and his boots were dotted with a foul substance that the rain had inexplicably not managed to wash off. Francesca was kneeling by the fireplace, attempting to spark a flame. From the sound of her mutterings, she wasn't meeting with much success.
"Dear heavens," she exclaimed, "what happened to you?"
"I had trouble finding a place to tie Felix," he explained gruffly. "I had to build him a shelter."
"With your own two hands?"
"I had no other tools,"
he said with a shrug. She glanced nervously out the window.
"Will he be all right?"
"I hope so,"
Michael replied, sitting down on a three-legged stool to remove his boots.
"I couldn't very well slap his rump and send him home on that injured leg."
"No,"
she said,
"of course not."
And then her face took on a horrified expression, and she jumped to her feet, exclaiming,
"Will you be all right?"
Normally, he'd have welcomed her concern, but it would have been far easier to milk it if he knew what the devil she was talking about.
"I beg your pardon," he asked politely.
"The malaria,"
she said, with a touch of urgency.
"You're soaked, and you've just had an attack. I don't want you to..."
She stopped, clearing her throat and visibly squaring her shoulders.
"My concern does not mean that I am more charitably inclined to you than I was an hour ago, but I do not wish for you to suffer a relapse."
He thought briefly about lying to gain her sympathies, but instead he just said,
"It doesn't work that way."
"Are you certain?"
"Quite." Chills don't bring on the disease.
Oh.
She took a bit of time to digest that information.
Well, in that case...
Her words trailed off, and her lips tightened unpleasantly.
Carry on, then,
she finally said. Michael gave her an insolent salute and then went back to work on his boots, giving the second one a firm yank before gingerly picking up both by the tops and setting them down near the door.
Don't touch those,
he said absently, moving over to the fireplace. They're filthy.
I couldn't get the fire started, she said, still standing awkwardly near the hearth. I'm sorry. I haven't much experience in that area, I'm afraid. I did find some dry wood in the corner, though.
She motioned to the grate, where she'd set down a couple of logs. He set to work igniting a flame, his hands still stinging a bit from the scrapes he'd incurred, clearing the bramble out of the chicken shed for Felix. He welcomed the pain, naturally. Minor as it was, it still gave him something to think about, other than the woman standing behind him. She was angry. He should have expected that. He did expect it, in truth, but what he didn't expect was how much it would sting his pride, and, in all honesty, his heart. He had known, of course, that she wouldn't suddenly declare her undying love for him after one episode of relentless passion, but he'd been just enough of a fool that a tiny little piece of him had hoped for such an outcome all the same. Who would have thought, after all his years of bad behaviour, that he'd emerge such a hopeless romantic? But Francesco would come around. He was fairly certain of that. She'd have to. She'd been compromised, quite thoroughly, he thought, with some measure of satisfaction. And while she'd not been a virgin, that still meant something to a principled woman like Francesca. He was left with a decision. Did he wait out her anger, or did he needle and push until she accepted the inevitability of the situation? The latter was sure to leave him bruised and gasping, but he rather thought it presented a greater chance of success. If he left her alone, she would think the problem into oblivion, maybe find a way to pretend nothing had ever happened.
"Did you get it started?"
he heard her ask from across the room. He fanned a spark for a few more seconds, then let out a satisfied exhale when tiny orange flames began to flicker and lick.
"I'll have to nurse it along for a little while longer,"
he said, turning around to look at her.
"But yes, it should be going strong quite soon."
"Good,"
she said succinctly. She took a few steps backward until she was butted up against the bed.
"I'll be right here."
He couldn't help but crack a wry smile at that. The cottage held a single room. Where else did she think she was going to go?
"You," she said, with much the air of an unpopular governess, "can remain over there."
He followed the line of her pointed finger to the opposite corner.
"Really?" he drawled.
"I think it's best."
He shrugged.
"Fine."
"Fine?"
"Fine."
And then he stood and began to strip off his clothing.
"What are you doing?"
she gasped. He smiled to himself, keeping his back to her.
"Keeping to my corner," he said,
tossing the words lightly over his shoulder.
"You are taking your clothes off,"
she said, somehow managing to sound shocked and haughty at the same time.
"I suggest you do the same,"
he said, frowning as he noticed a streak of blood on his sleeve. Damn, but his hands really were a mess.
"I most certainly will not,"
Francesca said.
"Hold this, will you?"
he said, tossing her his shirt. She shrieked as it hit her in the chest, which brought him no small measure of satisfaction.
"Michael!"
she exclaimed, hurling the garment back at him.
"Sorry,"
he said in his most unrepentant voice.
"Thought you might like to use it as a cloth to wipe up."
"Put your shirt back on,"
she ground out.
"And freeze?"
he asked, lifting one arrogant brow.
"Malaria or no, I have no wish to catch a chill. Besides, it's nothing you haven't seen before."
And then, over her gasp, he added, No, wait. I do beg your pardon. You haven't seen it. I didn't manage to get anything more than my trousers off last night, did I?
Get out, she said, her voice low and furious.
He just chuckled and cocked his head toward the window, which was thrumming with the sound of the rain against the glass. I don't think so, Francesca. You're stuck with me for the duration, I'm afraid. As if to prove his point, the small cottage shook down to its foundations with a force of thunder. You might want to turn around, Michael said conversationally. Her eyes widened slightly in incomprehension. So he added, I'm about to remove my breeches. She let out a little grunt of outrage, but she turned.
Oh, and get off the blanket, he called out, peeling off his sodden clothing. You're soaking it.
For a second, he thought she would plant her bottom even more firmly against it, just to defy him. But her good sense must have won out, because she stood and yanked the coverlet from the bed, shaking off whatever drops she'd left behind. He walked over. It took only 4 steps with his lengthy stride, and pulled the other blanket off for himself. It wasn't as substantial as the one she held, but it would do.
I'm covered, he called out,
once he was safely back in his corner. She turned around, slowly, and with only one eye open. Michael fought the urge to shake his head at her. Truly, this all seemed rather after the fact, given what had transpired the night before. But if it made her feel better to grasp at the shreds of her maidenly virtue, he was willing to allow her the boon, for the rest of the morning at least. You're shivering, he said.
I'm cold.
Of course you are. Your dress is soaked.
She didn't say anything. Just shot him a look that told him she did not plan to remove her clothing.
Do what you wish, then, he said, but at least come sit near the fire.
She looked hesitant.
For God's sake, Francesca, he said, his patience growing thin, I hereby vow not to ravish you, at least not this morning, and not without your permission.
For some reason, that made her cheeks burn with even greater ferocity. But she must have still held him and his word in some regard, because she crossed the room and sat near the fire.
Warmer?
He asked, just to provoke her.
Quite.
He stoked the fire for the next few minutes, carefully tending it to ensure that the flames would not die out, stealing glances at her profile from time to time. After a while, once her expression had softened a bit, he decided to press his luck, and he said quite softly,
You never did answer my question last night.
She didn't turn.
What question was that?
I believe I asked you to marry me.
No, you didn't,
she replied, her voice quite calm.
You informed me that you believed we should be married, and then proceeded to explain why.
Is that so? He murmured. How remiss of me.
Don't take that as an invitation to make your proposal right now, she said sharply.
You'd have me waste this fabulously romantic moment, he drawled.
He couldn't be sure, but he thought her lips might have tightened with the barest hint of contained humour.
Very well, he said in his most magnanimous tone. I won't ask you to marry me. Forget that a gentleman would insist upon it after what happened.
If you were a gentleman, she cut in, it wouldn't have happened.
There were 2 of us there, Francesca, he reminded her softly.
I know,
she said, and her tone was so bitter he regretted having provoked her. Unfortunately, once he'd made the decision not to taunt her further, he was left with nothing to say, which didn't seem to speak well of him, but there it was. So he held silent, pulling the woolen blanket more tightly around his barely clad body, surreptitiously eyeing her from time to time, trying to determine if she was becoming overchilled. He'd hold his tongue, forked though it may be, to spare her feelings, but if she were endangering her health, well then, all bets were off. But she wasn't shivering, nor did she show any signs of feeling excessively cold, save for the way she was holding up various sections of her skirt toward the fire, vainly attempting to dry the fabric. Every now and then she looked as if she might speak, but then she'd just close her mouth again, wetting her lips with her tongue and letting out little sighs. And then, without even looking at him, she said,
"I will consider it."
He quirked a brow, waiting for her to elaborate.
"Marrying you,"
she clarified, still keeping her eyes on the fire.
"But I won't give you an answer now."
"You might be carrying my child,"
he said softly.
"I am very much aware of that."
She wrapped her arms around her bent knees and hugged.
"I will give you an answer once I have that answer."
Michael's nails bit into his palms. He'd made love to her in part to force her hand. He couldn't get around that unsavoury fact, but not in an attempt to impregnate her. He'd thought to bind her to him with passion, not with an unplanned pregnancy. And now she was essentially telling him that the only way she would marry him was for the sake of a baby.
"I see," he said, thinking his voice uncommonly calm, given the hot rush of fury surging through his blood. Fury he probably had no right to feel, but it was there nevertheless, and he was not enough of a gentleman to ignore it. "It's too bad I promised not to ravish you this morning, then," he said dangerously, unable to resist a predatory smile. Her head whipped around to face him. "I could... how do they say it?" he mused, lightly scratching his jawline. "Seal the deal. Or at the very least, enjoy myself immensely while I try."
"Michael,
but how nice for me," he cut in, "that according to my watch..."
He was near enough to where his coat lay on the table to pluck his pocket watch out into the open.
"We've only 5 minutes to noon."
"You wouldn't,"
she whispered. He felt little humour, but he smiled all the same.
"You leave me little choice."
"Why?"
she asked, and he really didn't know what she was asking. But he answered her anyway, with the one bit of truth he couldn't escape.
"Because I have to."
Her eyes widened.
"Will you kiss me, Francesca?"
he asked. She shook her head. She was only 5 feet from him, and they were both sitting on the floor. He crawled closer, his heart racing when she didn't scoot away.
"Will you let me kiss you?"
he whispered. She didn't move. He leaned toward her.
"I told you I wouldn't seduce you without your permission,"
he said, his voice husky, his words falling mere inches from her lips. Still, she didn't move.
"Will you kiss me, Francesca?"
he asked again. She swayed, and he knew she was his.
Chapter 19. "I do believe Michael might be considering a return home. He does not say so directly in his letters, but I cannot discount a mother's intuition. I know that I should not pull him away from all his successes in India, but I think that he misses us. Wouldn't it be lovely to have him home?"
From Helen Stirling to the Countess of Kilmartin, 9 months prior to the Earl of Kilmartin's return from India. As she felt his lips touch hers, Francesca could only wonder at the loss of her sanity. Once again, Michael had asked her permission. Once again, he had given her the opportunity to slide away, to reject him and keep herself at a safe distance. But once again, her mind had been completely enslaved by her body, and she simply was not strong enough to deny the quickening of her breath or the pounding of her heart, or the slow, hot tingle of anticipation she felt as his large, strong hands slid down her body, moving ever closer to the heart of her femininity.
Michael,
she whispered, but they both knew that her plea was not one of rejection. She wasn't asking him to stop. She was begging him to continue, to feed her soul as he had the night before, to remind her of all the reasons she loved being a woman, and to teach her the heady bliss of her own sensual power. Was his only response. His fingers kept busy with the buttons on her frock, and even though the fabric was still damp and awkward, he divested her of it in record time, leaving her clad only in her thin cotton chemise, made almost transparent by the rain.
"You are so beautiful,"
he whispered, gazing down at the outline of her breasts, clearly defined under the white cotton.
"I can't. I don't..."
He didn't say anything more, which she found puzzling, and she looked at his face. These weren't just words to him, she realized with a jolt of surprise. His throat was working with some emotion she didn't think she'd ever seen on him before.
"Michael?"
she whispered. His name was a question, although she wasn't quite sure what she was asking. And he, she was fairly certain, didn't know how to answer. At least not with words. He scooped her into his arms and then carried her to the bed, stopping at the edge of the mattress to peel away her chemise. This was where she could stop, Francesca reminded herself. She could end it here. Michael wanted her. Badly, she could see quite visibly. But he would stop if she just said the word. But she couldn't. No matter how hard her brain argued for reason and clarity, her lips could do nothing but sway toward his, leaning in for a kiss, desperate to prolong the contact. She wanted this. She wanted him. And even though she knew it was wrong, she was too wicked to stop. He'd made her wicked, and she wanted to revel in it. "No," she said, the word crossing her lips with awkward bluntness. His hands froze.
"I will do it," she said.
His eyes found hers, and she found herself drowning in those quicksilver depths. There were 100 questions there, not one of which she was prepared to answer. But there was one thing she knew for herself, even if she would never speak the words aloud. If she was going to do this, if she was unable to refuse her own desire, then by God, she would do this in every way. She would take what she wanted, steal what she needed, and at the end of the day, if she managed to come to her senses and put an end to the madness, she would have had one erotic afternoon, one sizzling interlude, during which she was in charge. He'd awakened the wanton within her, and she wanted her revenge. With one hand on his chest, she pushed him back onto the bed, and he stared up at her with fiery eyes, his lips parted with desire, as he watched her in disbelief. She took a step back, then reached down and lightly grasped the hem of her chemise.
"Do you want me to take it off?"
she whispered. He nodded.
"Say it,"
she demanded. She wanted to know if he was beyond words. She wanted to know if she could reduce him to madness, enslave him to his needs, the way he'd done to her.
"Yes,"
he gasped, the word coming out hoarse and ripped. Francesca was no innocent. She'd been married for 2 years to a man with healthy and active desires, a man who had taught her to celebrate the same in herself. She knew how to be brazen, understood how it could whip up her own urgency, but nothing could have prepared her for the electrical charge of this moment, for the decadent thrill of stripping for Michael, or the staggering rush of heat she felt when she raised her gaze to his and watched him watching her. This was power, and she loved it. With deliberate slowness, she edged the hem up, starting just above her knees, and then sliding up her thighs until she'd nearly reached her hips.
"Enough,"
she teased, licking her lips into a sultry half-smile. He shook his head.
"More,"
he demanded. Demanded? She didn't like that.
"Beg me," she whispered.
"More," he said more humbly. She gave him a nod of approval, but just before she let him see the thatch of her womanhood, she turned around, wiggling the chemise up and over her bottom, then across her back, and finally over her head. His breath was coming hot and heavy over his lips. She could hear every whisper of it, almost feel it caressing her back. But still she didn't turn around. Instead, she let out a slow, seductive moan and slid her hands up the sides of her body, curving slightly to the back as she passed over her derriere, then moving to the front when she reached her breasts. And then, even though she knew he couldn't see her, she squeezed. He would know what she was doing, and it would drive him wild. She heard rustling on the bed, heard the wooden frame creak and groan, and she let out one sharp command.
"Don't move!"
"Francesca!"
he moaned, and his voice was closer. He must have sat up, must have been seconds away from reaching for her.
"Lie down,"
she said in soft warning.
"Francesca!"
he said again, but now there was a hint of desperation in his voice. It made her smile.
"Lie down,"
she repeated, still not looking at him. She heard him panting, knew that he hadn't moved, that he was still trying to decide what to do.
"Lie down," she said one last time, "if you want me."
For a second there was silence, and then she heard him settle back against the bed. But she also heard his breath, now tinged with a dangerously ragged edge.
"There you go,"
she whispered. She taunted him a little more, running her hands lightly over her skin, her nails skimming the surface, raising goosebumps all along their path.
"Mmm,"
she moaned, the sound a deliberate tease.
"Mmm."
"Francesca,"
he whispered. She moved her hands to her belly, then slid them down, not deeply to touch herself. She wasn't certain she was wicked enough to do that, but just enough to cover her mound, leaving him in the dark, wondering just what it was her fingers were doing.
"Mmm,"
she murmured again. He made a sound, guttural, primitive, and entirely inarticulate. He was nearing his breaking point. She wouldn't be able to push him much further. She looked over her shoulder, licking her lips as she glanced at him.
"You should take those off,"
she said, letting her gaze fall to his still covered groin. He'd not undressed entirely when he'd removed his wet clothing, and his manhood strained furiously against the fabric.
"You don't look very comfortable,"
she added, infusing her voice with just the barest hint of coy innocence. He grunted something, and then practically tore off his undergarments.
"Oh, my,"
Francesca said, and even though she'd planned the words as a part of her teasing seduction, she found that she very much meant them. He looked huge and powerful, and she knew she was playing a dangerous game, pushing him to his very limits. But she couldn't stop. She was glorying in her power over him, and she couldn't possibly stop.
"Very nice,"
she purred, letting her gaze roam up and down his body, settling directly upon his manhood.
"Franny," he said, "enough."
She let her eyes level onto his.
"You answer to me, Michael,"
she said with soft authority.
"If you want me, you can have me, but I'm in charge. Those are my terms."
He held still, then settled back slightly in acquiescence. But he did not lie down. He was sitting, leaning back slightly, his hands on the mattress behind him for support. His every muscle was straining, and his eyes held a feline air, as if he were poised to pounce. He was, she realized, with a shiver of desire, simply magnificent, and hers for the taking.
"What should I do now?"
she wondered aloud.
"Come here,"
he answered gruffly.
"Not quite yet,"
she sighed, turning toward him until her body was in profile. She saw his gaze drop to the hardened tips of her breasts, saw his eyes darken as he licked his lips, and she felt herself tauten even more as the mental image of his tongue on her sent a new rush of heat through her body. She brought one hand to her breast, curving around the underside, pushing herself up like some delectable offering.
"Is this what you want?"
she whispered. His voice was nothing but a growl.
"You know what I want."
Yes,
she murmured.
"But what about in the meantime? Aren't things sweeter when we're forced to wait for them?"
"You have no idea,"
he said roughly. She looked down at her breast.
"I wonder what would happen if I do this,"
she said, and then she moved her fingers to her nipple, rolling it about, her body twitching as the motion sent shivers down to the very centre of her being.
"Franny,"
Michael groaned. She glanced up at him. His lips were parted, and his eyes were glazed with desire.
"I like it,"
Francesca said, almost in wonderment. She'd never touched herself this way, never even thought to until this very moment, with Michael as her captive audience.
"I like it,"
she said again, then brought her other hand to her other breast and pleasured them in unison. She pushed them up and together, her hands making a sultry corset.
"Oh, my God,"
Michael moaned.
"I had no idea I could do this,"
she said, arching her back.
"I can do it better,"
he gasped.
You probably could,"
she acceded.
"You've had lots of practice, haven't you?"
And she shot him a look, one of sophisticated elegance, as if she were comfortable with the fact that he'd seduced scores of women. And the strange truth was, until this very moment, she rather thought she had been. But now he was hers. Hers to tempt and hers to enjoy, and as long as she had him exactly where she wanted him, she wasn't going to think of those other women. They weren't here in this room. It was just her and Michael, and the sizzling heat rising between them. She edged closer to the bed, batting his hand away when he reached toward her.
"If I let you touch one, will you make me a promise?"
she murmured.
"Anything."
"Nothing more," she said, her tone slightly officious. "You may do what I allow you, and nothing more."
He nodded jerkily.
"Lie back,"
she ordered. He did as she asked. She climbed onto the bed, not allowing their bodies to touch in any way. Raising herself onto all fours, she let herself sway above him, and then softly she said,
"One hand, Michael. You may use one hand."
With a groan that sounded as if it were ripped from his throat, he reached for her, his hand large enough to grasp her entire breast.
"Oh, my God,"
he gasped, his body jerking as he squeezed her.
"Both hands, please,"
he begged. She couldn't resist him. That one simple touch was reducing her to pure flame, and even as she wanted to exert her power over him, she couldn't say no. Nodding because she could barely speak, she arched her back, and then suddenly both of his hands were on her, kneading, caressing, whipping her already heightened senses into a frenzy.
"The tip,"
she whispered.
"Do what I did."
He smiled stealthily, giving her the impression that she might no longer be quite as much in charge as she thought, but he did as she commanded, his fingers torturing her nipples. And as promised, he was better at it than she was. Her body bucked, and she almost lost the strength to hold herself up.
"Take me in your mouth,"
she ordered, but her voice was not so authoritative any longer. She was begging him, and they both knew it. But she wanted it. Oh, how she wanted it! John, for all his ebullience in bed, had never loved her breasts the way Michael had done the night before. He'd never suckled her, never shown her how lips and teeth could make her entire body squirm. Francesca hadn't even known that a man and woman could do such a thing. But now that she did, she couldn't stop fantasizing about it.
"Come lower," Michael said softly, "if you want me to remain lying down."
Still on her hands and knees, she leaned down, allowing one breast to swing achingly close to his mouth. He did nothing at first, forcing her to swing lower and lower, until her nipple was brushing lightly across his lips.
"What do you want, Francesca?"
he asked, his breath hot and moist over her.
"You know," she whispered.
"Say it again."
She wasn't in charge any more. She knew it, but she was past caring. His voice held the soft edge of authority, but she was too far gone to do anything but obey.
"Take me in your mouth,"
she said again. His head snapped up and his lips nipped her, tugging her down until she was in a position for him to have his leisurely way with her. He tickled and teased, and she felt herself sinking deeper into his spell, losing her will and her strength, wanting nothing but to lie down on her back and allow him to do whatever he wanted to her.
"Now what?"
he asked politely, not releasing her from his lips.
"More of this? Or..."
he swirled his tongue in a particularly wicked fashion.
"Something else."
"Something else,"
she gasped, and she wasn't sure if it was because she wanted something else or because she didn't think she could stand one more minute of what he was doing just then.
"You're in charge,"
he said, his voice holding the barest hint of mocking.
"I'm yours to command."
I want...
She was breathing too hard to finish the sentence, or maybe she just didn't know what she wanted.
"Shall I offer you a few selections?"
She nodded. He trailed one finger down the centre of her belly to her womanhood.
"I could touch you here,"
he said in a devilish whisper,
"or if you'd prefer, I could kiss you."
Her body tightened at the thought.
"But that presents new questions,"
he said.
"Do you lie back and allow me to kneel between your legs, or do you remain above me and lower yourself onto my mouth?"
"Oh, my God."
She didn't know. She just didn't know that such things were possible.
"Or," he said thoughtfully, "you could take me into your mouth. I'm quite certain I would enjoy it, although I must say it's not really in the tenor of the interlude."
Francesca felt her lips part with shock, and she couldn't help but peer down at his manhood, large and ready for her. She had kissed John there once or twice, when she'd felt particularly daring, but to take it into her mouth, it was too scandalous, even in her present state of debauchery.
"No," Michael said with an amused smile. "Another time, perhaps. I can tell you'll be a most cunning pupil."
Francesca nodded, unable to believe what she was promising.
"So, for now," he said, "those are our options." "Or..."
"Or what?"
she asked, her voice more of a harsh whisper. His hands settled on her hips.
"Or we could just proceed right to the main course,"
he said commandingly, exerting a gentle but steady pressure on her, guiding her down toward the evidence of his desire.
"You could ride me. Have you ever done that?"
She shook her head.
"Do you want to?"
She nodded. One of his hands left her hips and found the back of her head, pulling her down until they were nose to nose.
"I'm not a gentle pony," he said softly. "I promise you, you will have to work to keep your seat."
"I want it,"
she whispered.
"Are you ready for me?"
She nodded. "Are you certain?" he whispered, his lips curving just enough to taunt her. She wasn't sure what he was asking, and he knew it. She just looked at him, her eyes widening in question.
"Are you wet?"
he murmured. Her cheeks grew hot, as if they weren't already burning. But she nodded.
"Are you sure?" he mused. "I should probably check, just to make certain."
Francesca's breath caught as she watched his hand curve around her thigh, moving toward her center. He moved slowly, deliberately, drawing out the torture of anticipation. And then, just when she thought she might scream at it all, he touched her, one finger lazily drawing circles against her soft flesh.
"Very nice,"
he purred, his words echoing her own.
"Michael,"
she gasped, but he was enjoying his position too much to allow her to rush things along.
"I'm not sure," he said. "You're ready here, but what about here?"
Francesca nearly screamed as one finger slipped inside of her.
"Oh, yes," he murmured, "and you like it too."
"Michael, Michael."
It was all she could say. Another finger slid into place next to the first.
"So warm," he whispered, "the very heart of you."
"Michael."
His eyes caught hers.
"Do you want me?"
he asked, his voice stark and direct. She nodded.
"Now."
She nodded again, this time with more vigour. His fingers slid out, and his hands found her hips again, guiding her down, down, until she could feel the tip of him at her opening. She tried to move her body down onto him, but he held her in place.
"Not too fast," he whispered. "Please, let me move you," he said,
and his hands gently pushed at her hips, edging her down until she felt herself being stretched open by him. He felt huge, and it was all so different in this position.
"Good?"
he asked. She nodded.
"More?"
She nodded again, and he continued the torture, holding himself still, but moving her body down atop his, each impossible inch of him sliding into her, stealing her breath, her voice, her very ability to think.
"Slide up and down,"
he commanded. Her eyes flew to his.
"You can do it,"
he said softly. She did, testing the motion, moaning at the pleasure of the friction, then gasping as she realized that she was sliding farther down onto him, that he wasn't yet entirely embedded within her body.
"Take me to the hilt,"
he said.
"I can't."
And she couldn't. She couldn't possibly. She knew she had done so the night before, but this was different. He couldn't possibly fit. His hands tightened on her, and his hips arched slightly up. And then in one mind-numbing jolt, she found herself seated directly atop him, skin to skin, and she could barely breathe.
"Oh, my God,"
he groaned. She just sat there, rocking back and forth, unsure of what to do. His breath was coming in fits and starts, and his body began to writhe under hers. She grasped his shoulders in an attempt to hold on, to keep her seat, and as she did, she began to move up and down, to take control, to seek pleasure for herself.
"Michael, Michael,"
she moaned, her body beginning to sway from side to side, unable to hold itself up, unable to maintain strength against the hot tide of desire sweeping across her. He just grunted, his body bucking beneath her. As promised, he wasn't gentle, and he wasn't tame. He forced her to work for her pleasure, to hold on tight, to move with him and then against him, and then a scream ripped from her throat, and the world quite simply fell apart. She didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say. She let go of his shoulders as her body straightened, and then arched, every muscle growing impossibly taut. and beneath her he exploded. His face contorted, his body lifted them both off the bed, and she knew that he was pouring himself into her. Her name was on his lips, over and over, decreasing in volume until it was the barest of whispers. And when he was done, all he said was, "Lie with me." She did, and she slept. For the first time in days, she slept deeply and truly. And she never knew that he laid awake the whole time, his lips at her temple, his hand against her hair, whispering her name, whispering other words as well. Chapter 20.
"Michael will do what he wishes. He always does."
From the Countess of Kilmartin to Helen Stirling, 3 days after the receipt of Helen's missive. The days that followed brought Francesca no peace. When she thought about it rationally, or at least as rationally as she was able, it seemed as if she should have found some answers, should have sensed some sort of logic in the air, something that might tell her what to do, how to act, what sort of choice she needed to make. But no, nothing. She'd made love to him twice. Twice. To Michael. That alone should have dictated her decisions, convinced her to accept his proposal. It should have been clear. She had lain with him. She might be pregnant, although that did seem a remote possibility, given that it had taken her a full 2 years to conceive with John. But even without such consequences, her decision should have been obvious. In her world, in her society, the sort of intimacies in which she'd engaged meant only one thing. She must marry him. And yet she couldn't quite summon the yes to her lips. Every time she thought she'd convinced herself that it was what she had to do, a little voice inside of her argued for caution. And she stopped, unable to move forward, too scared to delve into her feelings and try to figure out why she felt so paralysed. Michael didn't understand, of course. How could he, when she didn't understand herself?
"I shall call upon the vicar tomorrow morning," he'd murmured at her ear as he helped her mount a fresh horse outside the gardener's cottage.
She had awakened alone, some time in the late afternoon, a brief note from him on the pillow beside her, explaining that he was taking Felix back to Kilmartin and would return shortly with a new mount. But he had only brought one horse, forcing her once again to share the saddle, this time perched behind him.
"I'm not ready,"
she'd said, a sudden rush of panic filling her chest.
"Don't go see him. Not yet."
His face had darkened, but he didn't allow his temper to rise any further.
"We will discuss it later," he'd said,
and they'd ridden home in silence. She tried to escape to her room once they reached Kilmartin, mumbling something about needing to bathe, but he caught her hand, his grip firm and unyielding, and she found herself alone with him, back in the Rose drawing room of all places, the door shut firmly behind them.
"What is all this about?" he asked.
"What do you mean?"
she stalled, trying desperately not to look at the table behind him. It was the one upon which he'd perched her the night before, then done unspeakable things to her. And the memory alone was enough to make her shiver.
"You know what I mean," he said impatiently.
"Michael, I..."
"Will you marry me?"
he demanded. Dear God, she wished he hadn't just come out and said it. It was all so much easier to avoid when the words weren't right there, hanging between them.
"Will you marry me?"
he repeated, and this time the words were hard, with more of an edge to them.
"I don't know," she finally answered. "I need more time."
"Time for what?" he snapped. "For me to try a little harder to get you pregnant."
She flinched as if struck. He advanced upon her.
"Because I'll do it," he warned. "I'll take you right now, and then again tonight, and then 3 times tomorrow if that's what is required."
"Michael, stop," she whispered.
"I have lain with you," he said,
his words stark and yet strangely urgent. "Twice. You are no innocent. You know what that means." And it was because she was no innocent, and no one would ever expect her to be, that she was able to say, "I know, but that doesn't matter, not if I don't conceive." Michael hissed a word she never dreamed he'd say in her presence. "I need time," she said, hugging her arms against her body.
"Why?"
"I don't know. To think, to muddle through, I don't know."
"What the devil is there left to think about?" he bit off.
"Well, for one thing, about whether you'll make a good husband," she snapped back, finally goaded into anger.
He drew back.
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
"Your past behaviour, to start with," she replied,
narrowing her eyes.
"You haven't exactly been the model of Christian rectitude."
"This, coming from the woman who ordered me to strip off my clothing earlier this afternoon," he taunted.
"Don't be ugly," she said in a low voice.
"Don't push my temper."
Her head began to pound, and she pressed her fingers to her temples.
"For God's sake, Michael, can't you let me think? Can't you give me just a little time to think?"
But the truth was, she was terrified to think, because what would she learn? That she was a wanton, a hussy? That she had felt a primitive thrill with this man? A soaring, scandalous sensation that had never been there with her husband, whom she'd loved with every inch of her heart? She'd found pleasure with John, but nothing like this. She'd never even dreamed this existed. And yet she'd found it with Michael. Her friend, too. Her confidant. Her lover. Dear God, what did that make her?
"Please," she finally whispered. "Please, I need to be alone."
Michael stared at her for the longest time, long enough so that she wanted to squirm under his scrutiny. But finally, he just swore under his breath and stalked from the room. She collapsed onto the sofa and let her head hang in her hands. But she didn't cry. She didn't cry, not one single tear. And for the life of her, she didn't understand why not. He would never understand women. Michael swore viciously as he yanked off his boots, hurling the offending footwear against the door to his wardrobe.
"My lord,"
came his valet's tentative voice, poking out through the opened door to the dressing room.
"Not now, Rivas," Michael snapped.
"Right," the valet said quickly, scurrying across the room to gather up the boots.
"I'll just take these. You'll want them cleaned."
Michael cursed again.
Or perhaps burned,"
Rivas gulped. Michael just looked at him and growled. Rivas fled, but fool that he was, he forgot to close the door behind him. Michael kicked it shut, cursing again when he failed to find satisfaction in the slam. Even the little pleasures in life were denied to him now, it seemed. He paced restlessly across the deep burgundy carpet, pausing only occasionally at the window. Forget understanding women. He'd never pretended to have that ability. But he thought he'd understood Francesca, at least well enough to safely tell himself that she would marry any man with whom she'd lain twice. Once, maybe not. Once she could call a mistake. But twice? She would never allow a man to take her twice, unless she held him in some regard. But, he thought with a twisted grimace, apparently not. Apparently, she was willing to use him for her own pleasure. And she had. Dear God, she had. She had assumed the lead, taken what she'd wanted, relinquishing control only when the flames between them spiralled into an inferno. She had used him, and he would never have thought she had it in her. Had she been like this with John? Had she taken charge? Had she... He stopped, his feet freezing into place on the carpet. John. He had forgotten about John. How was that possible? For years, every time he'd seen Francesca, Every time he'd leaned in for one intoxicating whiff of her, John had been there, first in his thoughts and then in his memory. But since the moment she'd entered the Rose drawing room last night, when he heard her footsteps behind him and whispered the words, "Marry me," to himself, he'd forgotten about John. His memory would never disappear. He was too dear, too important to both of them. But somewhere along the way to Scotland, to be precise, Michael finally allowed himself to think, "I could marry her. I could ask her. I really could." And as he granted himself permission, it felt less and less like he was stealing her from his cousin's memory. Michael hadn't asked to be placed in this position. He had never looked up to the heavens and wished himself the earldom. He had never even truly wished for Francesca, just accepted that she could never be his. But John had died. He had died, and it was nobody's fault. John had died, and Michael's life had been changed in every way imaginable, except one. He still loved Francesca. God, how he loved her! There was no reason they couldn't marry. No laws, no customs, nothing but his own conscience, which had, quite suddenly, grown silent on the matter. And Michael finally allowed himself to ponder, for the very first time, the one question he had never asked himself. What would John think of all this? And he realized that his cousin would have given his blessing. John's heart was that big, his love for Francesca and Michael that true. He would have wanted Francesca to be loved and cherished the way that Michael loved and cherished her, and he would have wanted Michael to be happy. The one emotion Michael had never truly thought he could apply to himself. Happy. Imagine that. Francesca had been waiting for Michael to knock upon her door, but when the rap came, she still jumped with surprise. Her shock was much greater when she opened the door and found she had to lower her gaze considerably, a full foot to be precise. Michael wasn't on the other side of her door. It was just one of the housemaids, carrying a supper tray for her. Eyes narrowing suspiciously, Francesca poked her head into the hall, looking this way and that, fully expecting Michael to be lurking in some darkened corner, just waiting for the right moment to pounce. But he was nowhere.
"His lordship thought you might be hungry,"
the maid said, setting the tray down on Francesca's escritoire. Francesca scanned the contents for a note, a flower, something to indicate Michael's intentions, but there was nothing. And there was nothing for the rest of the night, and nothing the next morning either. Nothing but a breakfast tray and another bob and curtsy from the housemaid, with another,
"His lordship thought you might be hungry."
Francesca had asked for time to think, and that appeared to be exactly what he was giving her. And it was horrible. Granted, it would probably have been worse if he'd disregarded her wishes and not allowed her to be alone. Clearly, she could not be trusted in his presence, and she didn't particularly trust him either, with his sultry looks and whispered questions. "Will you kiss me, Francesca? Will you let me kiss you?" And she couldn't refuse, not when he was standing so close. His eyes, his amazing, silver, heavy-lidded eyes, watching her with such smouldering intensity. He mesmerized her. That could be the only explanation. She dressed herself that morning, donning a serviceable day dress, which would serve her well out of doors. She didn't want to remain cooped up in her room, but neither did she wish to roam the halls of Kilmartin, holding her breath as she turned each corner, waiting for Michael to appear before her. She supposed he could find her outside if he really wanted to, but at least he would have to expend a bit of effort to do it. She ate her breakfast, surprised that she had an appetite under such circumstances, and then slipped out of her room, shaking her head at herself as she peered stealthily down the hall, acting like nothing so much as a burglar, eager to make a clean escape. This was what she'd been reduced to, she thought grumpily. But she didn't see him as she made her way down the hall, and she didn't see him on the stairs either. He wasn't in any of the drawing rooms or salons, and indeed, by the time she reached the front door, she couldn't help but frown. Where was he? She didn't wish to see him, of course, but it did seem rather anticlimactic after all of her worrying. She placed her hand on the knob. She should run. She should hurry out now, while the coast was clear and she could make her escape. But she paused.
Michael.
She only mouthed the word, which shouldn't have counted for anything. But she couldn't shake the feeling that he was there, that he was watching her.
Michael,
she whispered, looking this way and that. Nothing. She gave her head a shake. Good God, what had become of her? She was growing far too fanciful, paranoid even. With one last glance behind her, she left the house, and never did see him, watching her from under the curved staircase, his face touched with the smallest and truest of smiles. Francesca had remained out of doors as long as she was able, finally giving in to a mixture of weariness and cold. She had wandered the grounds for probably 6 or 7 hours, and she was tired and hungry, and eager for nothing so much as a cup of tea, and she couldn't avoid her house forever. So she slipped back in as quietly as she'd left, planning to make her way up to her room, where she could dine in private. But before she could make it to the bottom of the stairs, she heard her name.
Francesca?
It was Michael. Of course it was Michael. She couldn't expect him to leave her alone forever. But the strange thing was, she wasn't quite certain whether she was annoyed or relieved.
Francesca,
he said again, coming to the doorway of the library. Come, join me. He sounded affable. Too affable, if that were possible. And furthermore, Francesca was suspicious at his choice of rooms. Wouldn't he have wanted to draw her into the Rose drawing room, where she'd be assaulted by memories of their torrid encounter? Wouldn't he at least have chosen the green salon, which had been decorated in a lush, romantic style, complete with cushioned divans and overstuffed pillows? What was he doing in the library? Which had to be, she was quite certain, the least likely room at Kilmartin in which one might stage a seduction.
Francesca,
he said again, by now looking amused at her indecision.
What are you doing in there?
She asked, trying not to sound suspicious.
Having tea.
Tea?
Leaves boiled in water,
he murmured. Perhaps you've tried it. She pursed her lips.
But in the library?
He shrugged.
It seemed as good a place as any.
He stepped aside and swooshed his arm in front of him, indicating that she should enter.
As innocent a place as any,
he added. She tried not to blush.
Did you have a pleasant walk?
He asked, his voice perfectly conversational.
Yes.
Lovely day out.
She nodded.
I imagine the ground is still a bit soggy in places, though.
What was he up to?
Tea?
He asked. She nodded, her eyes widening when he poured for her. Men never did that.
Had to fend for myself from time to time in India,
he explained, reading her thoughts perfectly.
Here you go.
She took the delicate china cup and sat, allowing the warmth of the tea to seep through the china and onto her hands. She blew lightly on it, then took a taste, testing the temperature.
Biscuit?
He held out a plate, laden with all sorts of baked delights. Her stomach rumbled, and she took one without speaking.
They're good, he offered. I ate 4 while I was waiting for you.
Were you waiting long?
She asked, almost surprised by the sound of her own voice.
An hour or so.
She sipped at her tea.
It's still quite hot.
I had the pot refilled every 10 minutes, he said.
Oh. Such thoughtfulness was, if not precisely surprising, then still unexpected. One of his brows quirked, but only slightly, and she wasn't sure whether he'd done it on purpose. He was always in such control of his expressions. He'd have been a master gambler, had he had the inclination. But his left brow was different. Francesca had noticed years ago that it sometimes moved when he clearly thought he was keeping his face perfectly impassive. She'd always thought of it as her own little secret, her private window into the workings of his mind. Except now, she wasn't sure she wanted such a window. It implied a closeness with which she wasn't quite comfortable any longer. Not to mention that she'd clearly been deluded when she'd thought she might ever understand the workings of his mind. He plucked a biscuit off the tray, idly regarded the dollop of raspberry jam in its centre, then popped it into his mouth.
"What is this about?"
she asked, unable to contain her curiosity any longer. She felt rather like prey, being fattened up for the kill. "The tea?" he inquired, once he'd swallowed. "Mostly about tea, if you must know."
"Michael!"
"I thought you might be cold," he explained with a shrug. "You were gone quite some time."
"You know when I left?"
He looked at her sardonically. Of course. And she wasn't surprised. That was the only thing that surprised her, actually, that she wasn't surprised. "I have something for you," he said. Her eyes narrowed.
"You do?"
"Is that so remarkable?" he murmured, and he reached down onto the seat beside him. Her breath caught.
"Not a ring. Please, not a ring. Not yet."
She wasn't ready to say yes. And she wasn't ready to say no either. But instead, he set upon the table a small posy of flowers, each bloom more delicate than the last. She'd never been good with flowers, hadn't bothered to learn the names. But there was a stalky white one, and a bit of purple, and something that was almost blue. And it had all been tied rather elegantly with a silver ribbon. Francesca just stared at it, unable to decide what to make of such a gesture. "You can touch it," he said, a hint of amusement playing along his voice. "It shan't pass along disease."
"No," she said quickly, reaching out for the tiny bouquet. "Of course not. I just..."
She brought the blooms to her face and inhaled, then set them down, her hands retreating quickly to her lap. "You just what?" he asked softly.
"I don't really know," she replied. And she didn't. She had no idea how she'd meant to complete that sentence, if indeed she had ever intended to.
She looked down at the small bouquet, blinking several times, before asking,
"What is this?"
"I call them flowers." She looked up, her eyes meeting his fully and deeply.
"No," she said. "What is this?"
"The gesture, you mean?" He smiled. "Why, I'm courting you." Her lips parted. He took a sip of his tea. "Is it such a surprise?"
After all that had passed between them, yes.
"You deserve no less," he said.
"I thought you said you intended to..."
She broke off, blushing madly. He'd said he meant to take her until she became pregnant. 3 times today, as a matter of fact. 3 times he'd vowed, and they were still quite at zero, and... Her cheeks burned, and she couldn't help but feel the memory of him between her legs. Dear God. But, thank heavens, his expression remained innocent, and all he said was, "I've rethought my strategies." She took a frenetic bite of her biscuit. Any excuse to bring her hands to her face and hide a bit of her embarrassment. "Of course, I still plan to pursue my options in that area," he said, leaning forward with a sultry gaze. "I'm only a man, after all. And you, as I believe we've more than made clear, are very much a woman." She jammed the rest of the biscuit into her mouth.
"But I thought you deserved more," he finished, sitting back with a mild expression, as if he hadn't just seared her with innuendo. "Don't you think?"
No, she didn't think, not any more at least. It was a bit of a problem, that, because as she sat there, furiously stuffing food into her mouth, she couldn't take her eyes off his lips. Those magnificent lips, smiling languidly at her. She heard herself sigh. Those lips had done such magnificent things to her, to all of her, every last inch. Good God, she could practically feel them now, and it left her squirming in her seat.
"Are you all right?" he asked solicitously.
"Quite," she somehow managed to say, gulping at her tea.
"Is your chair uncomfortable?"
She shook her head.
"Is there anything I can get for you?"
"Why are you doing this?"
she finally burst out.
"Doing what?"
"Being so nice to me."
His brows lifted.
"Shouldn't I be?"
"No."
"I shouldn't be nice."
It wasn't a question as he said it, rather an amused statement.
"That's not what I meant,"
she said, shaking her head. He'd befuddled her, and she hated it. There was nothing she valued more than a cool and clear head, and Michael had managed to steal that from her with a single kiss. And then he'd done more. So much more. She was never going to be the same. She was never going to be sane.
"You look distressed," he said.
She wanted to strangle him. He cocked his head and smiled. She wanted to kiss him. He held up the teapot.
"More?"
God, yes. And that was the problem.
"Francesca."
She wanted to jump across the table and onto his lap.
"Are you quite all right?"
It was growing difficult to breathe.
"Franny?"
Every time he spoke, every time he moved his mouth, even just to breathe, her eyes settled on his lips. She felt herself licking her own, and she knew that he knew, with all of his experience, all of his seductive prowess, exactly what she was feeling. He could reach for her now, and she wouldn't refuse. He could touch her, and she'd go up in flames.
"I have to go,"
she said, but her words were breathless and lacking in conviction, and it didn't help that she couldn't seem to wrench her gaze from his own.
"Important matters to attend to in your bedchamber,"
he murmured, his lips curving. She nodded, even though she knew he was mocking her.
"Go, then,"
he encouraged, but his voice was mild, and in fact sounded like nothing so much as a seductive purr. Somehow, she managed to move her hands to the edge of the table. She gripped the wood, telling herself to push away, to do something to move. But she was frozen.
"Would you prefer to stay?"
he murmured. She shook her head, or at least she thought she did. He stood and came to the back of her chair, leaning down to whisper in her ear,
"Shall I help you to rise?"
She shook her head again and nearly jumped to her feet, his nearness somewhat paradoxically breaking the spell he'd cast over her. Her shoulder bumped his chest, and she lurched back, terrified that further contact would cause her to do something she might regret, as if she hadn't had enough of that already.
"I need to go upstairs,"
she blurted out.
"Clearly," he said softly.
"Alone,"
she added.
"I wouldn't dream of forcing you to endure my company for one moment longer."
She narrowed her eyes. Just what was he up to? And why the devil did she feel so disappointed?
"But perhaps,"
he murmured. Her heart leapt.
"Perhaps I should offer you a farewell kiss," he finished. "On the hand, of course. It would only be proper."
As if they hadn't discarded propriety back in London. He took her fingers lightly in his own. "We are courting, after all," he said. "Aren't we?" She stared down at him, unable to take her eyes off of his head as he bent down over her hand. His lips brushed her fingers. Once, twice, and then he was through. "Dream of me," he said softly. Her lips parted. She couldn't stop watching his face. He'd mesmerized her, held her soul captive, and she couldn't move. "Unless you want more than a dream," he said. She did. "Will you stay?" he whispered. "Or will you go?" She stayed. Heaven help her, she stayed. And Michael showed her just how romantic a library could be.